Welcome back to the Chasing Tone podcast. Today with me is my good old buddy, old pal, old friend from the Tone Mob, Blake Weiland from the Stone Temple Pilots.
Oh, from the... Wait. I thought that was Jack. No, it's Scott. Who's Jack? What am I even talking
You're thinking
about
Lane right Staley. Now? You're thinking Eddie Vedder.
I don't know what I'm
Eddie
thinking.
Eddie Vedder was in the Stone Temple Pilots.
Eddie Vedder was in the Stone Temple
mm-hmm.
Pilots?
Pretty
really?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
You know, Eddie Vedder, Pearl Jam is good, and they got some good stuff, but I was always a little bit, like, I was never a huge Pearl Jam guy in compared to the other, I guess, their peers. But I gotta say, and this is totally different than Pearl Jam stuff, have you ever seen that movie Into the Wild?
No, huh?
It's rough. It's about a guy who decides to, like, leave his normal civilized life behind and, like, go live in Alaska in, like all by himself. But Eddie Vedder did the soundtrack to it, and it is so good.
Really?
The soundtrack is so good. Yeah, it's just him and acoustic guitar.
He's a pretty really talented awesome. Dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, he's actually a pretty good songwriter. I actually like, I say that like surprisingly.
yeah, you wouldn't know it, but.
No, he's a, I mean, that he was one of the guys growing up that his style of songwriting I was really drawn to, especially mm-hmm. as an angry youth. Or Ute, you know?
Ute?
Angry Ute. Ute. I was so, yeah. Then, of course, you know, everybody copied him for the next 5 years. But anyways, I don't know where that was coming from. Blake Weiland from the Stone Temple Pilots. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
No relation
yeah.
to Scott Weiland.
No relation and different spelling. And yeah.
You should change your spelling.
No.
And you should be like, I'm totally related to Scott Weiland.
No. I'm okay with not being related to Scott Weiland, as it turns out.
I don't know. Stone Temple Pilots have some great songs.
That's true. They really do. They got some good tunes. Good tunage.
Been listening
You've been really into the, not that you never weren't, but it seems like you've really been talking about the 90s grunge era.
It all quote unquote stems back from me listening to Isolated Track, or Stems, as they call them.
Ah, I see what you did there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. Seriously. It all comes back to all these isolated tracks I downloaded. And it's kept me up at night a lot because I'm just listening to all these old songs and just all different types of music, really, that I've never heard just the isolated guitar or the drums, the bass or the singing, like whatever. I'm just fascinated by all the things you don't hear. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? For example, I was listening to No More Tears, Ozzy Osbourne, Zakk Wylde the other day, right? Mm-hmm. For a video I've been working on. And in the comments last time I did this, people were like, we want to see you try to achieve the tone. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I actually have... I have a JCM 800 that was, what's the best way to put it? It is almost exactly like the JCM 800 that Zakk Wylde used and loved.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Custom made by Dave Friedman. And that's on loan, by the way. It's not mine. He just loaned it to me. So
permanent loan?
Well, it's seeming that way. I need to give it back to him. I've had it for like 3 years now. But maybe he forgot. Hopefully Dave's not listening to this.
Possession's 9/10, Brian. Possession is 9/10.
That's not to say, Dave, when Dave's like, where's my amp? I'll be like, what amp? What are you talking about? No, no, seriously. But anyways, so it's the JCM 800 that is a dead ringer for that era of Zakk Wylde, right?
Sweet.
And so I got the amp, got the cabinet, got the speakers, got a Les Paul. I don't have active pickups, so I don't have like the Bullseye Zakk Wylde, but I do have Les Paul. So I'm close, right? And I'm trying to nail all these tones, and I'm pretty close, but when you listen to isolated tracks, it is so bright. The guitar is just overwhelmingly bright. Even putting a 57 like right dead center on the cone, it's still not bright enough.
Wow.
And okay. I'm just like, holy cow. If I you know, pulled up this guitar tone, like in my bedroom or whatever, I'd be like, oh my gosh, man, turn the presence down, turn the treble down. But in the context of that song, it works. So I say that because like that's the kind of thing that fascinates me, because it's almost like jigsaw puzzle pieces. You know, like you hear all these isolated guitar tones, and by themselves, you're like, eh, I probably wouldn't pick that out for myself. But once you add the bass to it and the drums and everything else that goes along with it, you're like, ah, that sounds magical. And the weird thing is that, like, there's.
I have a quick question. Are these on this track in particular? Is it just the one guitar track, or has he got layers in there?
It's layered. It's layered. So what I'm like, this particular thing, I think, is from Guitar Hero or Rock Band or something like that, right? So it's like all the guitars are basically in two tracks. So what I mean is, for example, when you hear the solo, it's the main guitar track just goes to the solo, and the secondary track goes to the rhythm guitars.
Okay.
So that way the rhythm guitars and the solo part aren't on top of each other. But when you hear the main guitar track, it's all the layered guitars all on one stereo track.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's not true stems. Like a true stem would be no effects, every single track. So you may have like 85 tracks or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like a true stem, but it's isolated. It's about as isolated as I can get without, you know, trying to call up a producer and begging them to send me stems, you know?
So I forgot. This reminds me about something that I've been seeing pop up on Facebook occasionally. Well done, paid advertising, I guess. Have you heard of Nail the Mix? You seen that series at all?
That is a show in LA, right?
I don't know where it's from, but I think, it is a show.
I think it's a show on a radio station in LA.
Maybe we're talking about two different things, or maybe they're the same and I'm not aware.
Wait, maybe I'm thinking of something else. Nail the Mix. Okay, that's a website, right?
Yeah, it's a website, and I think it might be a YouTube channel. I honestly haven't looked too much into it past the ad.
It's a Facebook group or of some sort or something. But yeah. I think I've looked at this before. I'm waiting for it to load. Yeah, I've looked at this. So this is a really cool service.
It seems right up your alley.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. And I've honestly have thought about joining it just for my own practice. You know what I mean? Because basically, the service they provide is different mixes from different bands, some known, some not known, and then you know, no effects, no anything. They're saying, here's the raw audio. You compile it. Edit it how you want, just for practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like I said, there's some well-known bands, like there's some Periphery stuff, for example, I see you here right off the bat. But they don't have everything. So, for example, I've got Billy Joel isolated tracks. They don't have Billy Joel isolated tracks on this site, you know? So
going with it is one of the services they do in there is they get the real... like all the tracks, the drums and like the legit from the band.
Right.
Official, which is cool. But what I thought was really cool is occasionally they actually get the guy who did the mixing on the track for the song.
Yes.
To run through and do everything.
And show you what he's doing. Yeah. Yep.
I think that's awesome.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, I mean, I
just was like, wow, this is so cool. I don't do any of this, but this is a great idea. Whoever thought of that was genius.
There's bachelor's 4-year college degrees to learn stuff like that. And now you can pay. This sounds like a paid product of that advertisement. It's not. But
no, they didn't pay us. Wait, maybe they should. Hold on.
Maybe they should.
Delete this episode. We got to get our people in touch with them.
But no, it's like this is something that you would pay thousands of dollars to learn over the course of time, and now you can sign up for a couple bucks a month, and and it's $19 a month. Oh, no, $19.99. So it's $20 a month, and it's totally worth it in my opinion. Like if you want to learn to get your mixes better, to learn all the tricks of the trade in quotes, you know, this is a fantastic site to do that from. So, but no, this is not where I'm getting them. They don't, because like I said, I wanted all different types of music so I can make some fun videos.
Totally.
So
totally.
One of the things I've been wanting to do with isolated tracks I'm working on right now. Actually, I think I talked about this a few weeks ago with you. Turning some songs that should not be metal into metal.
Oh yeah.
And turning some songs that are metal into definitely not metal, like EDM.
Into country licks.
By the way, you've never heard Metallica behind an EDM beat. It's interesting.
Sounds terrifying. I don't know about that.
I've played it to my daughter and she said, "Dad, that is horrible."
She's probably right.
I said, "I was proud of this. I worked a long time on that." She's like, "No, that's horrible. The guy is yelling all the time. That's all he does is yell."
Well, yeah, that's the good part though.
Not when you're 12, apparently.
Oh, so. Man. Well, I suppose not. It took me a while. Well, let's see. We did have some stuff we were going to talk about other than paid product placement for
Nail the Mix. Yeah.
For Nail the Mix, but unpaid, actually. Wink, wink, Nail the Mix. Just saying.
Yeah, call me.
Yeah, call me. Holler at your boy. Anyway, so. What were we talking about? We were talking about Google searching and guitar pedals. And
So in Samurai Guitarist, who I did an interview discussion type thing on here, I don't know, maybe a month or so ago, Samurai Guitarist had a video that just came out where he's literally just typing in the Google search engine phrases and then answering some questions. So, for example, whenever you type in which guitar pedals into Google, it autofills to what people have searched for. Right? The most popular searches with that phrase. Right. And so what comes up is which guitar pedal to buy first, which guitar pedals are essential, which guitar pedals are buffered, which guitar pedals to buy, which guitar pedals for a beginner, what guitar pedal should I get first, what guitar pedals for blues, what guitar pedals for metal, and then which guitar pedals go first.
That's very interesting because, like we were talking about, so people are searching for these things. This is not made up stuff. This is what people have searched, and Google says, "Hey, maybe they're going to ask this question."
Right. The magical algorithm says, "I bet this person's going to ask one of these questions."
Mm-hmm. And that's because 500,000 people have already searched this exact same thing.
Right.
But I think, and I haven't looked at any of the results that come up, so I could be speaking out of turn here, but like something as vague as what guitar pedals to buy, like that is so, I mean, like that's something I would type in. If I knew nothing about guitar pedals, I would go to the Google search and type in something like that. And I feel like what would pop up would probably be like very difficult to wrap your mind around as somebody that has never messed with pedals before.
Well, So I just went ahead and did it. What guitar pedals to buy? And what pops up is the common things that you would find, you know, so from basically all different retailers, guitar buying guide, another guitar buying guide, 16 pedals to buy, then listicles, 8 guitar pedals to buy in 2018, beginner's guide to guitar pedals, you know, the essential guitar pedals, like all these different retailers, you know, or putting out their blogs or their articles or content in order to get views, in order to get people on their site, in order to sell guitar pedals, you know? So, but I think that the deeper issue is, and Blake, you and I were talking about this before, whenever I was younger and, you know, just starting in my guitar pedal buying career as a young, you know, young teenage guitarist, there was no Google. So I didn't have anything I could type into and get an answer from. I had to go to my local music store and say, which guitar pedal should I buy first? And obviously they're going to look around and probably say, we have a lot of margin on this one over here. This is the one you should buy, you know? Or, man, we have way too much stock of these. Buy this, you know, we'll give you a discount.
Yeah, well, I can tell you though, here, universally, this is the right answer across the board, and this is not what I did, just as a note, but it's what I should have done. The very first guitar pedal that everyone should buy is a tuner. Doesn't matter. That's the one universal truth.
Totally agree.
A tuner.
Totally agree. Yep.
It's amazing how much easier they make your life. Like, I remember I fought the tuner thing for a while. I was like, I'm not buying a tuner. That's boring. You know, right. I could save that money and put it towards some more fuzz. I was like, I'll just use this clip-on tuner. It'll be fine. But a tuner pedal just makes your life so much easier.
It is.
That's the first pedal everyone should buy. And if that's not on those blog articles, then those blog articles have failed.
Yeah, I haven't read through them, but I totally agree. In fact, there was this huge thread on the Wampler Tone Group. I think it was a Wampler Tone Group on Facebook, and that was the question: like, what's your one pedal that you, if you could only have one pedal, what would it be? Mm-hmm. You know, and everyone's like, you know, Klon or this or that, and I'm like, a tuner. I hate being out of tune, even if it's slightly. It drives me absolutely crazy. You know,
and it's just so convenient. Just like, ah, there we go. And we tune it up and we're good.
Right. And I mean, I use the Sonic Research because I love the strobe function on it. I think it's really, really accurate. I know. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best. I'm just saying me personally, that's my favorite one. I love the strobe ability of it. But anyways,
I like to keep it simple. I'm a Korg pitch black guy. That's me.
That's what I use on our show boards is the pitch black. Mm hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that one's a little bit underrated. You know, one thing I don't mean to turn this into the tuner pedal episode because that's kind of boring. But one thing I like about the Korg over like the Boss unit, the classic TU2/TU3, is I like, and this is the one situation where I actually care about this. I like that it's true bypass. Normally, I don't really care if a pedal's true bypass or not that much. You know, just depends on where I'm putting it in my rig. But I like my tuner to be true bypass. Because I got some fuzzes that are sensitive to that, and sometimes I want to run them earlier in my chain before some other buffered pedals, and it's just really convenient if my tuner is not buffered.
Yeah, you know? Same here.
That's just my thing. So anyway.
Yep, I like to actually run my tuner between the speaker output and the output of the amp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Uh huh. Because when you do that, it sets it on fire and it's awesome in a Jimmy Page or Jimi Hendrix sort of way.
Oh, that's where, yeah, I was going to say, you must be a pyromaniac.
That's the, that's also called the quickest way to ruin your amp.
Yes. There is no wrong pedal order, but there is a wrong amp order, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, there's exceptions to the rule of the wrong pedal order, yes. Do not put your tuner between the speaker output on the amp and the speaker.
Don't put anything in there. Well, that's not true. There's attenuators.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't ever put anything there. But if you got a fry at power station, that's a good thing.
I'm a two notes man myself. I'm a big two notes captor fan.
Two notes. I've always thought that was a weird name for a brand. I mean, I know they make great stuff, but like two notes. Like there's, I don't know. Seems limiting. There's a lot more than two notes you can play with that thing.
I should ask him why he called that two notes. I'm sure he's done a million interviews about it. I wonder why he did call his brand two notes.
It's kind of weird, right?
And you're like, no, there's 12.
There's so many notes.
especially if you're playing jazz.
Right, there's right, all the
notes. I mean, actually, there's way more than 12. And there's, you know. I guess what would you call it? Parts of a step, you know, like
increments
between an A and an A sharp. You know, what would you call that? Kind of an A
flat sharp. I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy for that kind of stuff.
An A that's you know, 2 cents off. I don't know.
2 cents off.
No, seriously. Yeah, you know, whenever you're pitch shifting something, you can shift it. You shift it by cents.
Oh, that's true. That's, you know? True. That's true. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way.
Not like in financial terms, but literally, that's, you know, the semitones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So, anyways, this is a boring conversation.
For who? I'm not bored.
I'm sure our listeners out there are like, oh my gosh, who are these guys? Stop it and get on with which guitar pedals to buy first.
Oh, we already told them, get a tuner first. That's all you need to know. Everything else is subjective after that.
You've got me curious now. Which ones? Okay, LifeWire.com. That's the very first entry. Okay.
Okay.
Apparently Full Tone OCD.
That's the first pedal you should buy.
Yeah. Soul Food. A Ditto. Hey, a Wampler Tumnus. Well, yeah. Look at that. Of course.
Of course, yeah. A Wampler Tumnus. But I mean, that's what I meant. Not a tuner. Get a Tumnus. Yeah, not a first.
Tuner. A Tumnus. Sorry, I got him confused. I've misread my notes. Yeah. JHS VCR, MXR carbon copy, Ernie Ball volume pedal, a Super Ego from Electroharmonix, and that's all they have on LifeWire.
See, that's
August 6th, 2018. Jay Schneider.
I mean, I'm glad to see that you're highlighted on that, but no offense, but that list is kind of lame. Like, that's just like, these are what you should buy? I assume that's not for a beginner, I guess. It's like a Super Ego, I don't necessarily suggest for anybody starting out. Like, that's a pretty intense ride to take.
Possibly. So, I'm trying to see, you know, because they have links on here to Amazon and Guitar Center. So, you know,
this is an affiliate job all around.
It could just be an affiliate thing. I don't know offhand. I think mostly when you see like top pedals to buy lists, it's either a retailer, like let's say it's, you know, your Guitar Centers or your Sweetwaters or whatever. Or it's generally going to be a blog or a website of some sort that has a link that when you click through, it doesn't cost you any more money, but they get just a sliver of a cut, right? They get an affiliate income. So, you know, you buy a $100 pedal, they may get $3 or something. And Amazon pays that. You don't pay that as a customer. So even if you don't go through an affiliate link, Amazon just gets more money. So, I don't see a whole lot of best pedals to buy that aren't affiliated somehow. But then again, probably are once I get to like page 140 of the Google search.
So let's spin this a little bit different direction. So if you were to have a beginning guitar player, now I guess I should have said something different back there. If these are just lists of cool pedals to buy, well, yeah, then they're not lame lists. But if they're like trying to tell beginners that that's what they should be doing, that's a little bit misleading, in my opinion. But if you had to suggest like a four or five pedals, minus a tuner, since we've already established that.
Right.
Like for your average beginning guitarist who's wanting to learn, you know, Nirvana licks and like whatnot, what would you say they should look for? Like they're just starting out. Maybe they're not even a pedal head like you and I. Like they just are just like dipping their toe in the water. Where should they go? What questions should they be asking?
Man, that's a really good question. So I'm approaching it in a kind of an odd way. Like I'm approaching it thinking the younger me, whenever I was going through that, I was listening to certain bands that I liked and thinking, how do I get that sound? You know, like whether it's, you know, let's say you listen to Incubus or whatever, and like, oh, wow, that's kind of an odd effect on the guitar. What's that doing there? You know, and then you do a little Googling, and you're like, oh, he's using this and a that. So maybe I need to get a this and a that. And then the question is, well, a this and a that, they range from $20 to $300. What's the difference between them? You know? Yeah,
that does get really confusing really quick as a new guy.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, what is the difference between a $20 overdrive OCD clone or whatever and the full tone OCD? You know, and that's a huge discussion. One of them being that one company that's making the clone is basically taking something that is popular already and just trying to make a cheaper version of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people think that's not the right thing to do. Others think it's just capitalism. I mean, yeah, you make up your own decision. I tend to look at things that if it's a $20 pedal, I pretty much figure there's going to be no support whatsoever. You know, like if there's a problem, the pedal may, and I've bought some $20 and $30 pedals from Amazon and you know, 30% of the time they show up and don't work. Luckily with Amazon, you can just send it right back. But if you're, you know, buying that somewhere else, or, you know, so even if it's like an eBay purchase that you can't get your money back for whatever reason, or Craigslist or whatever, you're kind of screwed. You know what I mean?
So yeah, you're throwing the thing in the garbage. Yeah,
you're literally just throwing it away. Another thing that I've noticed on cheaper pedals, it's everyone talks about how, well, it's the same parts. Yeah, kind of. I mean, like, they're all using like resistors and capacitors, but it's not, even if it's surface mount, and that's what's hard, when surface mount parts look similar. You know,
right.
We you know, not to dig up an old argument, but there was, you know, when Phil McKnight was talking about that and that whole thing that happened there that was, you know, blown out of way out of proportion. You can look at surface mount capacitors, and cheap ones look many times exactly like expensive ones. So it's it's really hard to actually tell the difference between those two parts, you know? Unless you just know how to do it and what to look for and all that stuff. I mean, the circuit boards on the cheaper pedals, like if you want to do any sort of modifications or if you do need to repair something, they generally are much harder on a cheaper circuit board. Just the traces and stuff, that they don't hold up. They burn off and come off the circuit board and pedal's dead now. With a higher quality circuit board, you know, we fix surface mount stuff, you know, all the time whenever it breaks. Not that everything breaks all the time, but, you know, when you're sending out thousands and thousands of pedals into the world every year, there's always going to be a percentage that you have to fix, right?
Of course.
So you know, when they do come back to fix them, you want to make sure that the quality is high enough that you can actually fix them. You know?
That would be handy.
You don't want it, like, this stuff is expensive. I don't want to throw a pedal into the trash can and just grab a new one off the shelf. You know, it's expensive. But it's expensive whenever you're buying high quality stuff and you're paying a big staff to make sure that there's a lot of test procedures and, you know, like everything that goes into having a business. And I would say customer support's probably one of the most expensive things. You know, it's expensive to have a guy buy a phone that you can call up and say, "Hey, my pedal's not working. What should I do?"
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, there's a lot of things. I mean, not to change this into the why, you know, what's the difference between cheap and expensive pedals, but a lot of it does come down to the customer support side. Like, I mean, you know, more expensive pedals are generally better supported. It's one of the selling points. It's like, you know,
right.
It's a big factor in dealing with the company. Like, do they have a good reputation for standing behind their product? And if the answer is yes, then, you know, generally they're going to be more expensive because that's hard to do.
Right.
This did not answer my question, though.
I've been known to go off on a tangent and never answer the actual question. It happens.
It's true. It's true. It's true. Let's get back to the board for a beginner.
So in other words, that was all very interesting info, Brian. Now, back to the question I asked that you totally evaded.
Right, exactly. Nice job. Nice job trying. This, you didn't sneak it by me on this time.
Some people are really talented at that. My mind just drifts off like a, you know, the squirrel climbing up a tree, you know, looking into the sky and thinking, wow, there's a lot of walnuts in this tree. I wonder how many I can store away for the winter.
You know? I sure would like to store away the one. Oh, wait, what's that? Is that a goat? Random aside, I know we talk about goats an excessive amount on this podcast, but last night, one of the reasons I had to, like, we were talking and the call fell and I was like, I really got to go anyway. One of the reasons for that is because I had to go out to my parents' farm and untangle a goat.
Oh, so your parents have goats.
Yeah, they got goats. So you'll be happy to know you're not the only one wrangling goats. just thought. Just wanted to put that in there.
You have great parents, Blake. Your parents are doing things right.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Are we going to talk about this board for a beginner? Or,
yeah.
Save that for next time.
No, I mean, we're only 30 minutes into this. Why not get into the topic now? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a good point. Goodest point as any.
Okay. So what's your question again?
So like actually this would be a good way to go. Picture young Brian who doesn't know much about effects.
Okay.
Talking to older Brian saying, "Hey, what kind of pedals should I get for me? I don't know anything about pedals, but I like these bands. Like, what's a board you would suggest to him?" And let's just pretend this is in today's times.
See,
for simplicity.
The thing that makes it hard for me to like say get this brand and this model is that I don't really keep my eye on that part of the market. You know what I mean? Like
what do you mean? No, I don't know.
So I couldn't tell you, hold on, let me look through Amazon and see like what the least expensive pedal is real quick. Cause that's,
well, it doesn't have to be, I'm not talking like cheapest, just like what's a board you would suggest to him? You know, obviously.
Oh, just types like chorus and reverb and delay and stuff. Right.
Yeah. And if you have a specific model that pops into your head, then go for that. Like what would young Brian's suggested board look like now that knowing what you know now?
I think it tends to revolve around what type of music that I'm into at the time. You know, younger Brian was a George Lynch mullet wearing, you know, Floyd Rose guitar playing, crate full stack wanting, you know, guitar player back in the late 80s, I guess that was, you know. Mm-hmm. My advice to that dude would be totally different than the Brian of today. You know, I mean, I guess if I had to really make a blanket statement,
mm-hmm.
first of all, I would say go to a music store and try out different types of pedals to see what you like. You are simply not going to learn what that is by watching YouTube videos, because I guarantee you, when you hear Pete Thorne or Chappers or Ola England or anyone play any pedal, they're going to make it sound 10,000% better than most of us, because they're such fantastic players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like literally they could plug into a can of farts and it's going to sound awesome. So with that said, like there's nothing better than going to a music store that has a large variety of different types of effects and saying, let me play through a fuzz. Let me play through a couple fuzzes. Let me play through a couple overdrives. Let me play through, you know what? Just bring everything out here. I want to play through everything you got. And, you know, plan on spending half of the day there. And I used to do that quite a bit, you know, when I was younger, and especially when Mars Music, which is before, I think it was before Sam Ash. Well, maybe it wasn't before Sam Ash, but anyways, Mars Music was this huge retailer, kind of like Guitar Center is now. They're out of business now, I believe. And they were local to me. And I would go there and hang out all day and just play guitar amps and guitars and pedals and enough where I started to get to know the staff. You know, they're like, back again, huh? And I'm like, yup, didn't get finished yesterday.
You gonna buy anything this time, kid?
Well, nope. I mean, like, you know, like, what they're not gonna kick you, unless it's a really crappy store. And this has happened to me as well before.
It's happened to me before, too.
They're generally not gonna kick you out for not buying something. I would
no, because at some point you will be buying something. At some point you will buy something.
Yes. With that said, I have been kicked out of music stores for not buying anything and for playing too long, and I didn't ever spend a dollar with them again.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, but let's say I'm pinned up against a wall and like, no, pick some pedals. Stop blabbering on about stupid stuff. Right?
Do it.
And just do it. You know, like Nike says, without burning shoes. Anyways, so I would say fuzz for sure. You need a fuzz. Man, but there's so many types of fuzzes, you know? You need a fuzz face. You need a big muff. You need, I want to say tone bender, but they're not as common, I think, in a lot of the big box retailers. Maybe you might be able to find a tone bendery style. Maybe
you probably can. You probably can.
You need a compressor. You want one with a blend knob. I promise you.
Agreed.
You want. I honestly wouldn't mess with in this right now in this day and age. I probably wouldn't mess with a chorus. Personal opinion doesn't mean it sucks. Just means it's like a one trick pony. You're going to use it like once. Flange can be cool if you're looking for some different sounds. I think Earthquaker and their what's the new flange called?
They have a new flange. Oh, the pyramids. Pyramids, yeah,
like that. That's a cool implementation on an old effect, you know. Mm-hmm. Flanger being an older type of effect, so flange is kind of like a heavy chorus, right? And then let's see, phaser. Maybe if you're into country or type of stuff, maybe you're doing old Waylon songs, you might get a phaser, or Van Halen type of stuff, and you need a phaser or flange. I'm in love with an EQ in the effects loop of basically any amp. Just because of the flexibility. Yeah. But the flexibility of radically changing the sound. Delay and reverb, absolutely for sure. And, you know, if you're a blues, I don't want to nail it down to a blues thing, but I know it seems like a lot of bluesier type players love the Univibe and do some really cool sounds with it, but it's not that it's just a bluesy pedal, you know. But again, yeah, if I'm playing
tough, like if I'm it's a tough if I'm tough pedal.
If I'm playing death metal, though, I'm not going to want a Univibe.
You know what I mean? Maybe you will, though. What if you got some sort of crazy new spin on death metal? I don't know. So if I was talking to like you kind of went at it a little differently than me. I was kind of like, I guess I didn't frame it this way. Probably asked the question poorly, but like I was thinking about my younger self when I played guitar, but I really didn't know anything about gear at all. And so I went to the store and I was jamming on some Fender amp or something. It sounded really good. Actually, it was the Fender Supersonic 22, which is a really cool amp.
Yeah. Cool amp. Yeah.
And I was really liking it. And the guy was like, yeah, this thing's really versatile. I'll probably be getting one myself one day. And he's like, if you hit it with a tube screamer, there's not much you can't do with it as far as gain goes. And I was like, oh yeah, tube screamer. Like I know what you're talking about. And I had no idea what he was talking about.
Right. And so you're looking behind the tubes going, where is the tube screamer at?
How do I hit it? What do you mean I hit it? And he's like, let me go get one and I'll show you. And then he pulled out.
And you pull it out of the box and you start hitting the back of the amp with it. And he's like, no, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
No, don't hit it with the tube screamer. That's not what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So he pulled it out and I was like, oh, I've been curious about those. And he's like, yeah, here, let's plug it in. And I ended up buying that pedal.
So I have to ask, I have to interject something. Yeah. Surely you immediately asked him what type of op amp was in there, right? You said, is there a 4558 in here?
Yeah, I was like, is this a...
Because I want to sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan. Yeah. And the 4558's what does it?
I have to have the 4558. Yeah, immediately that was my first question. But...
That's sarcasm.
When I got it home, though, because I was playing into a different amp, like it didn't work for me as well as I thought. It was okay, but it wasn't doing what I needed. And so, you know, if I could step back in time and tell, you know, young Blake what he should have been getting, it would look a little different than buying a tube screamer. You know, it would have been something like, well, obviously a tuner, we said that already, but I would have probably suggested something like a DOD 250 for overdrive. That's a little more my flavor of drive.
Yeah, that's a great pedal to throw in front of an amp.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, they always seem to work for me, no matter what the situation is. I can find a use for a 250 or the MXR Distortion Plus, whatever you want to call it. They're very similar.
Same basic thing, yeah.
So I would have said a 250, you know, and like a Big Muff. Like that would have been way more my speed for what I was trying to do. But I didn't know, had no idea. So I would have said like, 250, a big muff, a delay and a reverb, and I would have been able to do most of what I was playing at the time. Like, probably right. pretty well. So that's kind of where I was going with it, but that's what I would say to young Blake would have been to go
you
there.
Know, it's funny that you mentioned like the tube screamer in that situation. I remember the first time I tried a tube screamer, I was at actual place that's still here called Guitar Works in Greenwood, Indiana. Mm-hmm. Kevin Franklin actually owns that place. So hello, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
I think he listens to the show. Anyways, and this is years and years ago. This is young Brian, you know, long blonde mullet flowing, you know, still have all my hair because I didn't have kids back then. And, you know, it's just gorgeous, parted, feathered on the side. I look a lot like Joe Dirt at that time. And
Dirtay.
Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd read through all these guitar magazines that, you know, all these guys were using this tube screamer and it had this massive tone, right? So I'm like, I want to try the tube screamer. And, you know, they put me in a little side room and I don't even remember what amp it was, but, you know, like a little small combo amp or something. And it was on the clean channel, and I turned it on. And I'm like, huh, doesn't sound so massive.
Right. Like, in fact, it's broken.
Right. Like, I was expecting, you know, Ozzy Osbourne, Zakk Wylde, No More Tears tone, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, Mr. If you're familiar with that era, Alice in Chains, Them Bones, you know, mm-hmm. this massive, huge, gainy guitar. And instead, what I get is,
Little mid bump
and a little bit overdrive clipping, you know? And so for years, I was like, if that's what an overdrive pedal does, I don't want any part of it. And all that was based out of pure ignorance, not in a negative sense, but pure ignorance because I didn't know any better. And the Google machine wasn't invented yet, so I couldn't ask anybody, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't even remember the conversation with the sales rep that worked there at the time, but he probably said, how do you like it? And I'm like, it sucks.
Right.
You know, because I didn't know. And I think a lot of people do that when like they play something like this sucks. And maybe it doesn't suck for a particular thing. It just wasn't quite what you're expecting.
Well, it's exactly that. I mean, our experience is very, very similar. When I got that tube screamer and I tried it in front of the Supersonic on the hot gain channel, you know, having that thing goose the hot channel sounded awesome and massive. Like, it sounded really, really good. And so I was like, oh man, I'm gonna need this to hit my amp with. And I take it home and put it in front of my crate, and the same thing. It's like, well, I got a little mid. I'm like, what's wrong with it? Something's wrong. What's going on? Not thinking that like I was just hitting the front end of a decently, you know, a pretty hot tube amp. It's actually a really nice sounding amplifier. I'm surprised I never bought one. And then I went back to like my cheap crate and expected it to react the same way. I don't know what was I thinking. I just didn't know. Just like you said, I had no idea. So, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that.
Well, I think the moral of the story is if it doesn't have the 4558, it's not going to get you what you want.
I guess that's it. That's probably the moral of the story. You got to get that hand-wired version, too. Otherwise, it just doesn't sound good.
Yeah, electricity travels totally different through a hand-wired pedal than it does through a PCB mount. Uh-huh. PCB, you know, based.
Absolutely.
Yeah, see, electricity actually has emotions, and it prefers wire.
Yeah, it's natural habitat. It doesn't generally reside in a quote-unquote printed circuit board, even if that's a real thing, even, you know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, to electricity, wire is kind of like a good log cabin in the middle of the woods, where a printed circuit board is kind of like a manufactured house, you know, mm-hmm. and,
poorly manufactured house at that.
Poorly manufactured yeah. house. Yeah. And, it's just unhappy. No, I'm totally, you know, making fun of myself and my former thoughts years ago.
Yes.
But no, so, all right, I think the best way to wrap that up is maybe you've tried a pedal that you thought sucked or was horrible, when in reality, you may not have been using it for a better purpose that suits what you're trying to achieve. In your example, Blake, you really wanted something that was a little more, I don't want to use the word grungy because that implies I'm talking about Seattle rock in the 90s, but I mean like not a nice, neat, tight tone, you know, something with a little bit of flop to it and a little bit of kicky in the knee type of attitude.
Yeah, a little bit. It just has more, like a 250 has way more grit, you know, it's a hard clipping situation. And just the way that circuit works just worked a lot better for
it
and still does. It's still one of my favorite drive circuits, like, and people's takes on them. Like a 250 bass pedal is always like a great drive pedal for me. So anyway, we went all over the place, but we mostly talked about music the whole time. So I could chalk this one up as a success.
let's call this one of those rare episodes where we stay somewhat near the topic.
Sort of. Somewhat near the topic, right, yet still useless. That's what we do.
That's what my mom always said about. No, I'm
yours
kidding.
Too. Oh no.
No, I'm teasing. My mom loves me. Anyways, don't know where that was coming from. To everyone listening, hope you stayed on this long. Hope you're still listening. If you have any comments or questions, you can always email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. That goes direct to me. If you have a question for Mr. Weiland of the Tone Mob, such as, you know, what's the best 250 type pedal? He would love to answer those.
Oh, sure.
info@tonemob.com, Blake's email address. And we'll talk to you next week with a new podcast. Thanks for listening.
Bye.